Case number 19-6074, United States of America versus Eric Todd. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Longmire, you may proceed for the appellant.
Thank you. May it please the court, Judge Moore, Judge McKee, Judge Clay. My name is Phil Longmire. I represent the appellant, Eric Todd, and I would like to request 3 minutes of rebuttal time.
Fine.
Thank you. This appeal is about the untimely last-minute disclosure of material evidence, specifically a surveillance video that is both exculpatory and contains impeachment, but that unfairly prejudiced my client, Eric Todd, because despite two court orders requiring its production, despite repeated written requests from me for the specific piece of evidence that was withheld, and despite the government possessing this key piece of evidence for 3 years without turning it over, on the eve of trial, I received the White Castle video after a motion in limine, after a court ruling in which the government said that it
Mr. Longmire, could not play. Mr. Longmire, could I interrupt you? I mean, we know what happened here, and I know I can certainly understand why you're upset, but Brady doesn't require disclosure on a blanket basis before trial. As I'm sure you know, there are a lot of cases where the Brady question involved disclosure during trial. And what the law says, at least as I understand it, is that the government fulfills its obligation by disclosure at trial, not in advance of trial, unless because they chose to disclose it at trial, you can show that you were so prejudiced that the defendant was prevented from receiving a constitutionally guaranteed fair trial. So could you direct yourself to why this late disclosure was so prejudicial that you didn't get a fair trial?
Thank you, Judge McKee. Yes. Specifically, the video at issue contains multiple camera angles and a significant amount of footage. I was given it 3 days before trial, but the short amount of time to review that much video from that many angles and to make any sense of it prevented its effective use at trial. I'm sure the government will know.
Did you ask for a continuance?
I asked for a mistrial, and the court denied it, saying I was able to make effective use of using the excerpts of the video.
So you did not specifically ask for a continuance so that you could review the video?
I did not specifically ask for a continuance, nor did the court order the government to recall the two key witnesses who are on the video that I did not know about at the time they testified because of the length and the many angles in the video and the short amount of time I had to review it. These were two key government witnesses who—
Did you ask that those witnesses be recalled?
I did not, Your Honor. I did my best with what I had.
Well, and let's try to put this in perspective, too. I mean, I understand you got this late, but am I correct in understanding you already had 106 audio recordings, 4 audio video recordings, and 2 pocket audio recordings, 1 recording of a phone call, and 3 recordings of other phone calls?
I did, Your Honor, none of which.
So you knew exactly what the government's theory was in this case, that whether your client was in the car or whether your client was in the restaurant, their theory was wherever your guy was, that he was directing this transaction. There was never a question about that being the theory, was there?
I did not know that their theory was that he was the one conducting the transaction. None of the audio, none of the video that they did produce provides any information or evidence in support of that. The video does the exact opposite. It is exculpatory in that my client's nowhere to be found on the video. It's impeaching in that.
You pointed that out right at trial, that the video showed that it was Jackson who was coming in and out of the White Castle, not your client, right?
I did, Judge Moore. The key restriction or limitation that the government placed on me with their late disclosure is I did not know any of this until those two witnesses had already testified and left the stand. And had I been presented sufficient opportunity to make effective use of the video, I would have been able to cross-examine and to impeach both Belise McAtee and Antonio Jackson on very key parts of the video, such as the fact that Mr. Jackson is talking on the telephone to believe was either the confidential informant or the leader of the drug trafficking organization, which would disprove that my client had anything to do with this.
Or your client. Another option the jury could have believed, I suppose, is he's talking to your client.
He did testify that he had never spoken to, seen, or heard of my client. I did not know that he was on the phone at the time of the transaction, as the video shows, because I'd only been given the video a couple of days before and in the middle of trial preparation, in which I had to go down to Grayson County an hour and a half away to meet with my client. And I did not have sufficient time to, in order to make effective use of it at trial.
My understanding is that the government's theory was that Mr. Todd was in a gold car at the scene. Am I correct that that's what the government's theory was?
They did mention that at one point. Yes.
So the fact that it was Jackson going in and out of the White Castle would not be in conflict with their theory that Mr. Todd was in gold car masterminding the transaction.
That's another issue, Your Honor, that the late disclosure of the video prohibited me from effectively rebutting at trial, because I did not have time to search the multiple camera angles and the hours of foot to find this so-called gold car and determine whether there was anyone in it. I'm presuming that if Eric Todd was in it, the government would have that as evidence at trial. They did not, which why I think it's exculpatory. The video itself is exculpatory, but I did not have time to rebut that.
Have you had time to look at all these angles, et cetera, of the video subsequent to the trial?
I have, Your Honor. Subsequently, I have taken a look at it, and I did specifically look for exactly what you mentioned, the gold car, and there's no evidence of Eric Todd in a gold car. In fact, it's a grandmother and her grandson parking and then walking into the White Castle, which goes to my point that had I had time to review this and analyze it and make effective use of it, I would have been able to make a difference in this case. And the government had this for 3 years. They knew about it. They're under multiple orders to produce it. They did not. And I specifically requested it for these very purposes. I was actually under the impression that he must be on it, and at some point they're going to drop that on me. But it was the exact opposite. It was both exculpatory and impeaching, but the timing of the last minute disclosure prevented me from looking for the gold car in time to use it at trial. I did look at it afterwards, and that in and of itself is exculpatory. The fact that Antonio Jackson is on the phone in the video talking to someone who appears to be the confidential informant, if not his uncle, the leader of the drug trafficking organization, I was unable to ask those questions of Mr. Jackson because I did not know that information at the time, because I did not have enough time to review what they produced to me.
I'm not undermining the difficulty that the government put you in terms of timing here, but my understanding is that there were 7 hours of video. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, you had 3 days in which to look at that video, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and then the trial started on Tuesday.
Yes, Your Honor.
So I want to give you another chance, if you would, to explain why, in the light of this, that you didn't ask for more time or ask that these witnesses be recalled if at some point you determined that you would have proceeded differently. I just don't understand.
Hindsight's 2020, and if I had that opportunity again, I would. I moved for the mistrial under the Brady violation because I felt like the issue was in my mind so concrete, because the court was well aware of the presence of this video and my efforts to get it, and the fact that the government had it for so long and held on to it became my focus at trial. I would note, in the Spry case, it was the court who actually ordered the witnesses to be recalled. It wasn't the defense attorney who asked for it. And in the moment, I was raising the issue with the court, and the court did not find that there was prejudice. Ultimately,
you're surely not saying that the court had a duty here without having being asked to sua sponte order the government to recall witnesses, are you?
No, Your Honor, I'm not. I'm saying that in the Spry case, the court in the Spry case found that the disclosure was a likely Brady violation. It was not happy about the timing of the disclosure, but in order to help remedy that, rather than granting a mistrial, it decided to give a recess, and it decided to order the government to recall the two key witnesses. That did not happen in this case.
Have you found any cases where the government, for whatever reason, provided the Brady disclosure late or during the trial, where the court has reversed a conviction without the defendant having asked for a continuance and or recalling the witnesses if the claim is the information would have changed how you cross-examine the witnesses? Are there any cases that you're aware of?
Your Honor, I am aware of the Bagley case, which contains some of those similarities. United States versus Bagley, 473 U.S. 667. It's a 1985 case in which the court did say that as in this case, we had filed a motion. Your Honor, I see that I'm out of time.
You can finish your answer.
Thank you, Your Honor. As in this case in Bagley, the prosecution had misleadingly induced defense counsel to believe that there was no impeachment to be had of the witness it was calling, and then the evidence produced at trial indicated otherwise. So the court did reverse and remand to the appellate court to determine if the trial would have been different had that inducement not been made.
Did you even cite Bagley?
The government did, Your Honor.
I'm saying, did you cite it? You apparently think it helps you.
I do think it helps me. I think Spry helps me. And I made use of the case that the government cites to show the shortcomings of its own argument.
Thank you.
I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gilbert.
Hey, please the court. I'm Assistant U.S. Attorney Jay Gilbert.
Could you turn your volume up, please?
Yes, sir. Your Honor, is that any better?
No.
Look, not much. Just cozy up to your laptop and speak more loudly, please.
Okay. Your Honor, I think I've done everything technically I know how to do here, but I will try to speak more loudly.
Thank you.
Regarding the Brady issue, as the court points out, Brady does not generally apply to a tardy disclosure of exculpatory information, but rather to a complete failure to disclose.
Counsel, let me ask you one thing. What was the government's explanation at the time that the at trial as to why it had taken 3 years to turn over material that it had for that length of time? Not what you say in your brief by way of argument, but what explanation did you give to the court at the time during trial as to why you waited 3 years?
Your Honor, I don't think the record clearly shows the reason why. The U.S. Assistant U.S. Attorney who tried the case explained that based upon the record, it seems to me, if I had to surmise, I would say it simply got lost in the shuffle.
But I'm asking, what did you tell the court? I assume the court wanted to know why you didn't turn this over for 3 years. And I assume that there was some sort of answer that was provided. What was said to the court about that delay?
Your Honor, the segment of the record that deals with that appears actually in the letter that I filed, which tells that the assistant United States attorney who tried the case basically said he wasn't aware of it. He wasn't aware it was in the U.S. attorney's office. And I think that it was just simply crossed wires between the U.S. attorney's office and the agency.
Are you saying that he stated that he personally was not aware of it or that the U.S. attorney's office was not aware of it?
He said, the record said, I was not aware of it. And I was under the impression that the parties were having trouble opening it, but I was mistaken in that, apparently. So that was the explanation. And beyond what's in the record there, I don't have a further explanation regarding the late disclosure, Your Honor.
Well, isn't there a problem for defendants in late disclosure of exculpatory material that this case really personifies?
Well, Your Honor, I will concede that this should have been turned over earlier. And beyond what I've just expressed to the court, I don't have a further explanation for that. But the question is whether there was prejudice here. And the United States did turn over this White Castle video on a Friday, May 24th. The trial began on the following Tuesday. The first witness was called on Wednesday. And so it was basically 5 days after receiving the disc that witnesses started testifying. And of course, as the court pointed out, in his oral Brady motion at trial, Mr. Todd's counsel did not ask for a continuance and did not ask for the recall of any witnesses who've already testified. He simply asked for an extreme remedy, which was a new trial. He did not specifically say how the video, if it had been given to him earlier, would have made it reasonably probable that the trial would have turned out differently. And there was other evidence to show that Mr. Todd was in fact involved in a conspiracy to deal meth. The evidence has to be considered collectively rather than item by item. And the evidence here clearly showed that Mr. Todd was guilty of conspiracy to deal meth.
Is the government's theory that Mr. Todd was in this gold car, is that the government's theory?
Yes, Your Honor, that is the theory.
And does the video show a gold car anywhere?
Your Honor, I don't know, and this is something I'll bring up now, and Mr. Longmire can correct me if I'm wrong. But in looking back through the trial record and preparing for this oral argument, I didn't see where the video in its entirety had been admitted into evidence. What I did see were 7 screenshots that Mr. Todd's counsel had selected from the video to use to cross-examine United States witnesses at trial. And so the video as a whole, as far as I can tell, is not in the trial record. And so it's difficult to refer to the video as a whole when it's not in the record. If it is in the record, I stand corrected, and I think Mr. Longmire can correct me. But based upon my review, the video is not in the record as a whole, only the five screenshots.
So if that's the case, that it's not in the trial record, are you then saying that it's not something that's in front of us?
Your Honor, it's my estimation that it's not. If it's not in the trial record, I'm not sure how it could be reviewed on appeal. The video as a whole, as I can see, is not in the trial record. Only the screenshots.
What I'm curious about, Mr. Gilbert, and this will give Mr. Longmire a chance to think about this, and he can address it too if he chooses when he stands back up. But if that was the theory and they're looking for a gold car, it seems like when the defense counsel is going through the tape, he would have been looking for the gold car. And he's the one that chose which screenshots to show and simply didn't. It apparently chose not to show the gold car. Now, interestingly enough, he has not said today that he missed the gold car. He couldn't find it because he didn't have enough time. He only found it afterwards. We've not seen that in either the brief or the oral argument today. So what do we make of that from the government's perspective?
Well, Your Honor, the United States had witnesses showing that although Mr. Todd did not appear in the White Castle video, he was directing it by phone from apparently a gold car. At least that's what I get from reading the record. And specifically Ms. Lyle, I believe, said that she was talking with Mr. Todd on the phone at the White Castle and said, "There, I see you." And she was referring to Mr. Todd, who apparently, according to her, was in a gold car.
And the informant did testify that Todd was in the gold car. Is that correct? I'm asking for you to verify that or not.
Your Honor, that is my memory of the record. Having read through the entire trial record, I believe she did say he was in a gold car. I believe that either she or Agent Anastasio said that Mr. Todd was in a gold car at the White Castle. If I'm incorrect about that, I apologize in advance, but I believe that's what the record reflects.
Well, one of the confusing parts about that is I read someplace the thought that the government's theory was that Todd was in the car that it turns out Jackson was in, but then I read Anastasia's testimony, he didn't say that. So it's a little hard from reading the briefs to figure out what is the claim here and what's the response.
Your Honor, as I understand it, having read the trial record, my understanding was that Mr. Todd was in a gold car and that Ms. Lyle was communicating with him by phone when he was at that gold car at the White Castle.
So your recollection is that the government never claimed he was in the car that apparently Jackson was in?
Your Honor, I honestly do not remember as I sit here which car Jackson was supposedly in. I don't remember.
All right, thank you.
I take it you were not the trial lawyer.
No, Your Honor, I was not. The trial lawyer, by the way, has since retired, but I have, you know, done everything that I could in reading the record to try to understand everything that happened at trial. So, in summary, on the Brady issue, there was no Brady violation. Mr. Todd did not show the requisite prejudice, and the district court did not err in denying the Brady motion. So we believe that the court should go ahead and affirm that denial of the Brady motion. Are there other questions about that, Your Honor?
I don't think so.
Would the court like to address the 404B question next or the racial disparity question?
It's up to you how you wish to use your argument time.
Okay. Your Honor, regarding the 404B issue, reversal is proper only if the district court committed a legal error by admitting the prior acts evidence for an impermissible purpose, relied on clearly erroneous facts in finding that the prior acts occurred, or abused its discretion in weighing the evidence's probative and prejudicial value under Rule 403's balancing test. And as explained in the United States brief, the questions that were asked were not answered in the affirmative, and the district court properly ruled that the counsel's unanswered questions themselves were not evidence, and therefore
Isn't this opening up a really potentially devious behavior on the part of a prosecutor to ask a question that puts in front of the jury the ideas that the defendant is a felon and that the defendant had guns? And if the witness says no, no problem. The thought is left in the jury's mind. Isn't that troubling?
Your Honor, in this particular case, there was an explanation for that. And I think that what Your Honor is asking would be a problem if left unchecked. But I think that the district court would inquire about that and ask why the questions were even asked in the first place. In this case, the United States counsel said that he was asking the questions to help refresh her recollection and also to prove the identity of Mr. Todd and to prove that he was part of a gang that was part of a conspiracy to sell drugs within the DTO. And so he was asking these questions to try to establish the conspiracy itself. And so under 404B, as I understand it, that is a valid purpose for asking questions such as that. So I think
a question about somebody being in prison, i.e., and a question about guns shows that he's a member of this particular gang?
That was his intention in asking the question, so he said, Your Honor. And I agree that the question could have been asked more artfully, but that was the reason for it, as explained in the record.
Again, was there a request for a curative instruction if there was a problem at the time of that exchange?
Actually, Your Honor, there was colloquy about this at the bench, and Mr. Longmire and the judge agreed that no limiting instruction to the jury would be appropriate at that time or desirable at that time, but instead the issue would be deferred until the final jury instructions. And the court did in fact include an instruction in the final jury instructions saying that the jury is to consider only the evidence and the lawyer's questions weren't considered evidence. And there's a presumption that juries will follow jury instructions. And so it seems to me that what could be done was done here.
Well, that's just part of the pattern instructions. That wasn't anything that would have been specifically requested to deal with this particular incident. So I'm gathering from what you can tell, once the judge deferred this until the instructions, there was no request to deal with this in a way other than giving the normal instruction.
Your Honor, that is how I saw that the district court dealt with the issue. I didn't see anything in the record specifically instructing the jury about this particular line of questioning of this witness. But I guess
what I'm asking you is you didn't find anything where the question was raised again on behalf of the defendant at the end of the trial.
No, Your Honor, I did not. I didn't see that in the record.
Thank you.
Thank you. I see that my time is running short. And so briefly, regarding the racial disparity issue, beyond the reason set forth in the United States brief, I think it's important to point out that the government to which Mr. Todd's counsel refers is actually the Jefferson County, Kentucky attorney. The Courier Journal article that's in the appendix for Mr. Todd's brief talks about this this policy, but it is to be applied prospectively, not retroactively. And so it would have no direct application to Mr. Todd's 2007 drug crimes resulting from a traffic stop. Mr. Todd's drug-related convictions in 2007 are valid and have not been overturned on constitutional or any other grounds. Those convictions are properly part of Mr. Todd's criminal history as set forth in the PSR, and the district court did not err by opting not to address directly Mr. Todd's racial disparity sentencing argument. I see I'm out of time. I went over a few seconds. I apologize.
That's okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Longmire.
Thank you. If I may rebut on the Brady issue, there, the bull car was a theory that was floated at trial, and I liken it to a whack-a-mole where I only had so much time to review the video that I simply did not have time, despite staying up all hours of the night, to review every allegation that was raised at trial relating to something that the video would rebut. The images, the same with the video, I was not able to use the actual video because I did not have a time with all the other trial preparation activities, including seeing my client who was an hour and a half away, to be able to splice the video or use excerpts of it in the way that I normally would.
Let me interrupt you to just make sure I understand this. Did you have time to review the whole video?
I did have time to review the whole video. The issue is there are
let me ask the question this way then. Have you found any cases where somebody got the Brady material, albeit closer to the trial than they would have liked? I don't think there's any doubt about that. And they actually had a chance to review all of the Brady material, but then the court said that they were deprived of their right to a fundamentally fair trial because there wasn't enough time to think about how to use what they had reviewed. Are there any cases that you've been able to find that slice us that finely?
I can only refer back to the Begley decision, and then I can only distinguish the Spry and the other cases that do it that. And there is an argument that pretrial disclosure in most of the cases that I found does take care of, along with recess and other things, a prejudice that has been claimed by the untimeliness of the disclosure. Here, I think it's different because it is a video. In all those cases, we're dealing with reports, transcripts, small amounts of written information. This is a video, which is a totally different world, I would submit, for a trial lawyer having to review and make sense of multiple angles and multiple hours of footage and piece it together in the short amount of time, and then use the technology to make an effective use of it at trial.
Your opponent has said that the video is not in the district court record. Is that correct?
The video is not in the record. The screenshots that I was able to pull are in the record, which show multiple angles and significant amounts of time on the timestamps that I would have had to review.
But does the fact that the video is not in the record mean that we on the Court of Appeals are not allowed to look at the video?
I'm out of time, but if I may respond.
Yeah, please.
I do not believe so, because I think the absence of the video, it goes to the prejudice in that I was unable to make effective use. The excerpts that I was able to use, I believe, provide the court with enough of a factual basis, along with the motions in limine and the other parts of the record that show the untimeliness and the suppression related to the Brady issue. And from the excerpts that I provided, the material prejudice that it caused without having the whole video in the record. Thank you. I'm out of time.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you both. And Mr. Longmire, I see you're appointed pursuant to the Criminal Justice Act, and we thank you for your service to your client in the interest of justice. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Judges.
The case will be submitted, and both of you may disconnect. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.